Well, I hope, if nothing else, I hope you listened to the first two speakers. Whether you listen to me or not probably doesn't matter a whole hill of beans in the big picture, but I hope you listen to the first two. Right team, not all stars, right team, right? Right now, the most talented baseball players in the NCAA are mostly out of the tournament. Best teams are left. Right, and intentional utilization of data. Now, I got to tell you what, if you sat in here and you just listened to Trey and you didn't come away saying, you know what, if I know the numbers, my life is better and I can be a lot more excited about my business. That was an exciting presentation filled with data and the opportunity to really think about where you're headed. So, there's power in knowing the numbers, and that's just super valuable, and I really hope you listen to both of those presentations. Now, we're kind of in the middle of the afternoon, and I know, and Lee, when I was younger, this would have been a picture of beer, but now that I'm a more mature and sophisticated person, we've got coffee up here. And I know that's what you're all thinking, right? Get me out of this room, let me go have a cup of coffee or a beer, and let my mind clear for a minute, okay? And if that's what you're going to do, I'm actually okay with that. I understand that. But before you go, let me give you three things to talk about while you're having coffee and beer. If you just want three things to help you think more about your business in a different way, these are the three resources I would give you, okay? I'm a big reader. You can listen to these. You can listen to a million different podcasts about people interpreting this work. If you're going to get only one and you don't like to read, get Do the Work by Stephen Pressfield. Okay? It is short, big font, right? And you can speed through it, and then you'll have to read it like 9 times to really get the true value. This is a book about resistance, right? How many of you grew up in the cattle business? Okay. How many of you value our legacy in this industry? Our biggest problem is our legacy. Because we have allowed it, instead of being a sail, it's become an anchor. And that anchor keeps us from making good decisions. Right? So this is a really good one. The Art of Innovation by a guy named Tom Kelly. The Stanford Design School produced a company, IDEO, that's one of the great design companies ever put together, really brilliant group of people. And then Blue Ocean Strategy, which is really about rethinking where you want to be in the marketplace. Do you want to swim with the sharks or go to the blue ocean where there's no blood in the water? Right? My preference is go where the water's blue. I don't like red in the water because sharks are hungry. Right? And I'm a fish, and I don't want to be food. So I think these are three that are worth taking a look at if you really want to think about how to get out of the box. Okay. So if you want to leave now, there's your take home, right? Study these three things, it'll help you. But if you're willing to stick with me for about 30 minutes, I'll share another set of powerful learning tools towards the end that I think will be useful to you. Here's what I've finally figured out, and it took a long time. I used to believe that the power was in the answer. It is not. It is not. The power is in the question. Every spreadsheet that's built at Padlock, I'll guarantee you, was driven by the creation of a good question. Right? I don't think it was, well, we have the answer. It was, what do we need to know? What's the questions we need to ask to make this business work? And the power of questioning is even more important today and will get even more important because this is the world we live in. This is our normal. We live in a VUCA world, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And that is not going to change in the foreseeable future. If you don't like this, you have chosen the wrong era to be alive. right? This is our normal. This is our normal. And you know what? Huge opportunities in the midst of this. Huge opportunity. Now, things change on us. Some of us in this room used to think this is what entertainers looked like. And my grandmother thought that these people, Roy Rogers and Dale Evans, were just over the top in costuming. You can imagine the impact this band would have had on her. Right? Things change. What's outlandish in one era is not in the next. That's just the reality. Right? Things change. And they change at speed. They change at speed. Okay? I have a PhD in quantitative genetics, which at one point in time actually meant something. And in the early days of getting in that space, I learned a program in Fortran, which is about as useful as knowing ancient Greek, right? It was useful. It did train my brain a certain way. But, right, things change, and they just speed up. And here's the thing. How many of us are interested in change? We usually aren't, right? Because change isn't that much fun. And those of us in agriculture really seem to be resistant to change. But let me tell you what, the world is interested in us. These are the tech companies focused in livestock production, almost all of whom are investing serious capital and intellectual capacity in changing the way we do business. It's a lot of companies, isn't it? Right? When we first went out to the Silicon Valley with our program, we thought we might run into maybe 5 or 6 kind of ag-focused companies. There's 600-700 ag-focused companies, new companies in the Silicon Valley today, right? And many of them run by people who didn't grow up in agriculture, right? It's one of the greatest opportunities in our history. For the first time in a very, very long time, an entire generation of very bright, smart, disruptive people care about what we're doing. They want into agriculture. Now, they may want to do it differently than we've done it. But we get a chance to access a brand new generation of talent if we'll choose it. If we choose it. Or we can reject them and say, oh, that's too much change, right? Because all this does have an impact on us, right? I just spent yesterday being trained in 2 new technologies, and I was going to take a selfie, but I couldn't figure out my camera. And I was going to title it, Old Dog, 2 New Tricks in 1 Day. Like, I learned Asana, which is a project management software, and I learned a new calendar system called Calendry that's just cool as thunder if I can just figure out how to use the damn things, right? This was me all yesterday, right? So much learning. So how do we get in the box? This is an interesting process. Let's think about that box for a minute. Let's start with a story about these little creatures, the flea. A flea can jump about 8 inches. Okay, that's close to about 180 times their length. That's pretty athletic, right? That's a pretty athletic little beast. Okay, that's their natural capacity. But if we take a little population, these little fellows, and we stick them in that jar, and this jar, this closed system, is about 4 inches in height. Get them in there. We cap it. We make sure they got enough oxygen so they can survive. And we leave them in there for 3 days. Only 72 hours. Just 72 hours. 3 days. we can pull the lid off of that, and a population of creatures that could jump 8 inches will not leave that jar because they've now been trained to jump no higher than 4 inches. Now, the good news is there's a bunch of people my age and older in this room. Is that what we've done to our children and our employees? Have we put them in the jar, capped it, and trained them to only use half of their natural capacity? Think about the conversations you've had with your employees, with your kids. I'm going to share just a very fast story. Some of you heard me tell this story, but it was a moment where God got a hold of me and kept me from saying something stupid, right? Which I'm known to do a lot of. I have 5 children, all wonderful, and each of them in their own unique, marvelous, created ways. My son Trey was about 10 years old, smallest kid in his class. We were walking out of a football camp. Trey's walking along there, and he's the shortest, smallest kid on that field. We're walking off that field, and he says, "Dad, do you think I'll ever be an All-American?" Now, a smart father would have said, "Trey, All-Americans can come in a lot of ways." Right? Let's think about being an All-American in physics. Let's learn to use your brain, because I don't know that you're going to be an All-American in athletics. Right? That was a smart thing to say. But God got old man and said, "Well, Trey, how hard are you willing to work? How much do you want that?" "Well, I want that." "Well," and to the point of our first speaker, that's what I made a decision at that point in time, not to be a coach, but to be a dad. And his senior year of college, we walked off the field together, his last lacrosse game for Boise State, and his coach walked up to him. He says, "Trey, we just got the All-American list. You're an All-American." Right? We didn't put him in a jar. Now, I've put lots of other people and myself and employees, my brothers in our business, in a jar at times, right? This is a big deal. So you got to ask yourself the question, what is limiting your capacity to think outside what you currently know? Right? That's a big, big question for all of us to spend time on. Okay, so where does innovation come from? Innovation comes essentially from 2 places. Number one, it comes from a pain point. People will not innovate when they're comfortable. Right? Rapid innovation. You guys had that fire, Trey. Boy, after the initial shock of, "Oh, crap," right? The innovation kicked in big time, didn't it? Man, I mean, you had no choice, right? There was pain, and there's barren ground and 4,000 cows. We got a problem, right? We got to innovate. We got to figure this out, right? And we're here at the BIF meetings, right? And I got to thinking about that. Well, I got to bring this back around and make sure I include some kind of cattle deal here. So here it is. Where did selective animal breeding come from? I believe it came from a pain point. Nobody started selective animal breeding with, "Oh, let's make a better product." They're like, "That son of a bitch is too crazy." That's where it started. And I don't know if they killed them or they turned them into the neighbors. But there was a selective decision made, right? That was an innovation, right? Oh, what if we didn't mate the wild ones to anything? Maybe we'd have a better time being in the cattle business, right? So pain points are real. Never forget that picture. That's what drives every major innovation in the marketplace. The second thing is unhappy customers. People who have experienced something unpleasant, right? If the taxi business had been really, really, really good, Uber would never have been born. Now, I'm going to just throw this out here because that's why you brought me up here, is to stir people up. If we were really, really, really good at our job, we might not be facing cellular protein. They're a competitor, and they're here because we didn't meet everybody's needs. Right? Not all customers love what we do. So we're going to have to figure out how to innovate and how to outcompete these new competitors because they're here. Now, the problem and the unhappy customer by themselves don't solve problems. Somebody has to bring creativity to the table. But when we do, when we find the problem, when we find customers with the problem and we apply creativity to it, that's when we get innovation. That is, in essence, the American way. Right? That's really all that innovation is, right? And there's all kinds of books that are much more complicated than that, but for my little old brain, that kind of works, right? I got three circles and a simple formula. So where do we put innovation to work? That's a good question. Where can we do this? Well, it's interesting. There's a lot of places. This has got to be the greatest men's bathroom in history. Right? And it's like, remember when your dad put those bulls in, well, maybe it was you, put those bulls in a circle for this kind of the same concept. It's really cool. Right? That is, I mean, this is a fun truck stop. I will literally wait. I will wait, and I will be in pain for an hour just to get in this because they got racing stuff. I mean, it's just cool. Right? That is not your standard truck stop bathroom, is it? That's just innovation. Innovation can also happen in higher tech spaces. Right? How many of you have seen the movie or read the book Apollo 13? Okay, cool story about innovation, right? They even brought the guy that was mission control, Gene, I can't remember his last name, the NCBA a few years ago. Yeah, it was really interesting, right? They had a problem. The problem was there was too much carbon dioxide in that closed atmosphere. And sooner or later, that kills you. This is bad for NASA. They had a public relations problem, dead astronauts. That makes engineers look really bad. So they said, well, we got to fix this up. And they did it with a real high-tech thing, duct tape. And a sweat sock, as I recall, was involved, right? Innovation doesn't have to be super high-tech at all. And it can be done in agriculture. I work with a lot of co-ops these days. There's one of the guy named Max up at Landmark in Wisconsin. He said, look, every day on the farm has an Apollo 13 event. That's why we have to be innovative, because we've got to solve these problems. There's all kinds of low-tech challenges, pain points in our lives. How many of you as kids remember encountering the barbed wire gate you had been ordered to get open before the cattle got there and could not get that damn gate open? Right? We've all encountered one of those, right? And we innovate like crazy to figure out how to solve it. And there's more than one innovation, right? Get out your pigging string and make it work, whole chunk of chain, stretcher, all kinds of devices that can be built to solve a pain point for unhappy customers, right? It's innovation. Innovation is not that hard. Solutions, though, that make it into the marketplace, that can be a bigger challenge. Solutions are driven by design. Great design. All right? Solutions are driven by design. So I would encourage you to study design. Okay? Now, this is where it's going to get uncomfortable. If all of your friends are cowboys or cowgirls, you have a problem. Your circle is too narrow. You need designers in your life. You are going to have to, if you want to really learn innovation, you're going to have to hang out with people who don't necessarily think, talk, behave or look like you. And early on, that's really, really hard. I'm going to tell you something. Our ranch in Colorado has gotten a lot better because my dad did something really interesting about 20 years ago. He started inviting people to our brandings that were people who had been critical of agriculture in our county. You ought to come to our brandings now. I mean, it's the craziest group of people. I mean, there are nurses, the county attorney who's got hair down to here, hippies, cowboys, doctors. I mean, it's everybody, right? And everybody has learned some skill at that branding table. But most importantly, what we've learned is to listen to what they're observing, what they're having to say about the land, the people, the product, the way we do things. It's pretty valuable, right? Design helps us get past the brick wall by figuring out ways over, under, around, through the problem. Now, when we design solutions, there are two approaches. We can make them complicated or simple. Now, I like this one because there's a dark side in me that's like, go faster. Bigger, let's get to a turn really, really quick, a fast one. Because I want to see that big yellow piece of mining equipment kind of fall off there just because I'm dark. This is a low-tech solution right here, isn't it? Has it gone away in the age of virtual reality? No. They got a software system yet that doesn't ask you for the option to print? Nope. Short run, right? We still use that. So what do we do in innovation? Innovation, we can get pretty interested in high tech, right? Anybody know what this is? Anybody know what this device is? It's an incubator for babies, right? So babies that are born that are compromised, or in child, they've been born probably too early, or they've been through a really traumatic birth, right? We can get them in the ISO infant incubator. Very high tech, tons of technology, requires electricity, all kinds of computer programming, really high tech coding, and we can make that child, we can change their environment, and that baby's going to survive. We can really increase their chance of survival, right? But there's some assumptions around this piece of technology, isn't there? One, it's going to be really important to have electricity, because without it, this baby is not useful. Right? When this thing breaks, trust me, they don't invite me over to fix it. I was telling somebody earlier, as a matter of fact, when I get to the ranch, the manager will immediately find anything new, and he'll point at it, and he'll look at me, and he'll say, not for you. Right? Old, broken down, that you can use, but none of the new stuff. Right? Nobody's going to get me to come fix this, right? It's extremely high technology. But what about places where electricity doesn't always work or isn't available? What about places where high-tech repairs and high-tech replacement parts simply are not affordable? Don't those children also have, don't we have a responsibility to try to figure out how to give them the same opportunity at life? Well, yeah, I would argue, yeah, we have that same obligation. So a design team was in a developing country and said, man, huge infant challenges, lots of newborns that were not surviving. And this was a cool solution, except it didn't fit the environment at all, right, Trey? It just didn't fit. But what they noticed is that in this particular country, they could make a car run forever. The cars always ran. So what they did is they said, all right, we need a power source that's not electricity, and we need to use parts that people know how to fix. This is a device that does almost the same success rate as that more high-tech solution I just showed you. All the parts in this device, the operational parts, are from a car. That's design. That's innovation, right? They didn't get higher tech. They got less tech. They found how to use the resources available to them to solve the problem in a different way, right? The heating source, headlights. Right? Battery, car battery is the energy source, right? And they could fix on even, matter of fact, the alarm in this one is the car horn, right? So how do we get there? How do we become more innovative? How do we become out of, how do we get out of that box? How many of you played sports? Anybody played sports ever in their life? Okay. Being on the sideline is a different experience, isn't it? When we're not in the game, we're in uniform, but we're on the sidelines. That's a different experience than actually being in the game, isn't it? Once we cross the sideline, which is, by the way, an artificial barrier, nothing, it's really not a, it's just a, it's an artificial thing. Once we step on the field, everything changes, doesn't it? We're now engaged. Want to get more innovative? Get on the field. Go past that barrier. We all get this notion, right? I'm not creative. Yeah, you are. That was part of the deal when you were given life. That was something you got. Now, some of you are more creative than others in certain ways, but everybody's got a level of creativity in them. So the key is to get past that artificial barrier and get on the field, which means you have to start. And as Tom Peters says, you got to act your way into thinking, because that beats thinking your way into acting. It is a full participation event. You have to be willing to try. Right? So funny how we beat that out of ourselves and how we beat it out of kids. Right? And I'm at war with the education system. It's my sole goal in life, is to change the way we do education because it's so jacked up. Because what we do is we force people into boxes, right? We force them into that box. Well, the name of the game is we got to let people actually get to where they ask questions. That's the key. That's the key. So if we want to make ourselves more innovative, here's something. I'm going to give you two questions, and I think these are the two questions that can help you. Number one is hit the reset button, and this is your question. What if what we do today wasn't available to us? What if we had to start over from scratch? Take away all of what you know and put it on the sidelines. In other words, embrace your inner immigrant. Every one of us, we go back far enough, even if we're native peoples, someone left what they knew and went to a new place. Right? Their innovation happened because they had no choice. It was innovate or die. When my great-great-grandparents came from Ireland, poor, uneducated, hungry, illiterate, they had no choice. They'd stayed in Ireland, they were going to die. They came here, they had to figure it out, right? They had to innovate. That's that starting over, right? So early on, you were advised, when you get your advisory team, get some people who have been through some really tough stuff. That is the best advice you're going to get today. That is the bet. Find those people and learn from them, right? In our program, we work with all these young entrepreneurs. As you come up the stairs, right on the wall, it says, fail forward, fail fast, fail cheap, learn like crazy. We embrace and teach failure as the first prerequisite to innovation. You have to try, and nobody gets it right on the first try. Nobody. Nobody. Right? LeBron James didn't just pick up a basketball and get good. All right? Now, if you don't like the reset button, because that's a hard one, like if we had to start all over again, right? Because that is like in your face, then try this one. What would it take to be the best in the world at what we do? Be the best in the world. What would it take to be the best in the world? What would that look like? Right? Now, you can define world how you want. If you're in a ranching space, what would it be like to be the best ranch in this county? It might be to be the best ranch in the state. It might be whatever, right? Go ahead and define world how you want to, but it forces you into rethinking, right? Seth Godin, another great author in this whole space of innovation and entrepreneurship, says, look, winners quit fast. They quit often, and they quit without guilt. Very fast story. I was raised in a Hereford family. I have nothing, and I love Hereford cattle, still love Hereford cattle. But my grandmother, when she told the story about Noah's Ark, wistful miss and anxiety fourth got on the ark. Hereford cattle. Right? I got out of college, I came home, I'd been traveled all around, and I knew that we were going to have to change, especially our commercial division. So what did I do? I did the most crazy thing I could think of. I went to Montana and I bought 50 Angus cows and brought them back to Colorado. All on my own dime with nobody's permission. Right? My dad was just a good enough guy that instead of kicking me in the nose, he said, all right, let's see what happens here. But he did send them clear to the back of the ranch. Nobody could see them. Right? Because our valley, it was all Hereford cattle. My grandmother found out about this. She came out. I did the best sales job I'd ever done in my life. I was really trying to sell her. And she got out of the truck after I'd shown her those cows, and she hadn't said a word. Starts down the lane in her big old New Yorker. She backs up. She rolls down the window, she shakes her finger at me, she says, this is going to take some getting used to. But that was my first time where I got clear out of the box, where I said, look, we're going to have to let go of what we know to keep this ranch alive. Eventually we started crossbreeding, doing all kinds. We used every genetic thing we knew how to use. Saved the ranch. That's why we're still in the ranching business today, because we let go of what we knew. That saved us. Now, your circle of friends. Guys, I am not kidding. As valuable as it is that you are at BIF, if you can figure out how to get on an airplane or a bus or a car and be at a high-tech or a high-creative conference by tomorrow morning, get the hell out of here. We'll send you the notes. Right? I'm not anti-learning your industry. I'm not. You've got to know this business. But you're not going to be able to stay in this business until you figure out what's going on outside in the bigger world. You need the most bizarre set of friends you can find. Right? And I am dead serious. You need as many bizarre people in your life as you can get. Because they will bring something to you which is a way to see the problem differently. Right? And innovation comes in different styles. Right? David Kelly wrote another book called The 10 Faces of Innovation. There's learning, organizing, and building. There's 10 basic types. You need access to all 10 in your business. One form or another. You can't be all of them. You can't ask your team to only be just storytellers or just caregivers. You've got to figure out how to get across this span, right? Because that's how innovation actually happens. Innovation happens through volume of ideas and complete early on willingness to not judge any idea too early, right? For Mattel to get to the 5 games it releases each year, it looks at close to 7,000 different concepts before it picks its 5, right? That's a lot of sorting, isn't it? That's being open to a lot of ideas because chance favors the connected mind. You will be more successful if you are more connected outside your own area of expertise. So what gets in our way? What gets in the way of us achieving our goal of getting out of the box? Here's the first thing. The reality is innovation is messy, and we don't like messy. Innovation is messy. If you are leading an organization, you have to be willing to let your team try things that are messy. You have to do it at a scale that doesn't break the company. But it's critical. If you are a perfectionist, you will not like innovation because you have to go faster. If you're busy trimming the last blade of grass on the football field, you're going to miss the innovation of the forward pass. All of the magic happens outside your comfort zone. We do something really weird with young companies in our program. Before they can spend one dime, they have to go talk to the market, which means they have to go talk to potential customers. We have this little concept, and it's called knocking on 500 doors. Right? Early on, we force it on about 30 to 50, but for most of our students, they're like, you want me to go talk to 30 to 50 people I don't know? Yeah, pretty much. Right? I think you said you're going to invite somebody to be on your advisory board. You don't text them. You don't send them an email. You call them. Better yet, you show up at their place of business. You take them to coffee. Right? If you can learn that, you're going to win. I guarantee you. If you can do this, you will win. But if you get caught in that jar with those other fleas, you're able to go 8, but you're staying at 4 because you just don't want to bang your head on that lid anymore. Even after they move the lid, you're going to be in trouble. This is a big one. So how do you do it? 30 seconds of courage. Practice 30 seconds of bravery. Let me tell you what, I don't love cold calls. I hate them. I still don't. I'm 61 years old. I hate cold calling. Ick. But what I do is I think about it. I need 30 seconds of being brave. Come on, Tom, 30 seconds. Not even a full minute, big boy. Come on, here we go. 30 seconds of bravery. Over and over and over and over again. Right? Those of you that are looking at Trangon, I'll never be able to get the numbers down. Yeah, you just need 30 seconds of bravery over and over and over again. You'll learn how to do that stuff. Pick your team. This is so critical. Right? That's how we used to do it, right? I was going to do baseball. I thought, well, it might be colder in South Dakota, so we'll use hockey. Okay? Works the same, right? Pick your team. Get the right team. It's not necessarily the best players. It's the right team. Right? And be careful about your paradigm about that. Now, I'm going to make an observation. Those of you who are my age and a little older, I want you to look around the room and tell these young people what's different about this room than we were when we were their age. What's different? Bill, what's really different in this room compared to when we were young guys? I agree. I'll tell you something I see, though, that was not the case when I was the age of most of the youngest people in this room. Look at the gender split. And so the young women in this room, I'm going to tell you something right now. I'm going to ask you to make one promise to all of us. Promise me that you will never apologize for being the boss. Never apologize for being in charge, for being the boss, for being the owner. Never, ever apologize for that. You with me? Because this industry doesn't make it if you don't pick up the reins of leadership. We cannot afford to have half our team on the sideline anymore. Those days are over. They are gone. They are not coming back. We need talented women in this business in droves. It will not be a straight line. Innovation is never a straight line. It is twists and turns and mistakes and going back and starting over and retraining. It means tearing down silos. Right? I still got to tell you, sooner or later, some college somewhere in agriculture is going to say, all right, we're done with departments. They're gone. Because they are a barrier to everything we need. I have 3 degrees in animal science. The worst idea for American agriculture is continued departments of animal science and departments of ag econ and departments of this and departments of that. I understand the value of specialization. Very, very few people building companies solely on one core capacity. Takes the breath. And we will have to struggle with ideas. And we will have to have joy in the struggle. I love this picture. Look at the joy. It's a struggle, right? It's a tug of war, but there is joy in that. The struggle is the power. That's where we really get good at things. You're going to have to give up time. You want to be an innovator? I mean, Trey told you. He said, right, that guy roping, that's where we all want to be. I mean, that's where I want to be. But you got to make time for innovation, for thinking, for really getting into that space. Embrace this notion. In times of change, learners inherit the earth while the learned find themselves beautifully equipped to deal with the world that no longer exists. It happens over and over and over and over and over again. Now, I told you I'd give you another set of cool resources. Want to learn innovation really well and a really cool story? Moneyball's about as good as it gets. If you don't want to read this, the movie is close enough. It misses a lot of the really good statistics, but it's still pretty good. Guy Kawasaki, one of my favorite guys out in the valley, wrote a book called Enchantment. Phenomenal. And then Tom Peters, I think, is my personal guru that I've followed like crazy in this space. There's four of his, all these folks' podcasts, they YouTube, there's all kinds of great resources out there. The name of the game is to read and think outside what you know. Read and think outside what you know. All right? I always thought that Disney should have been in charge of beef promotion. They understand it, right? Bunch of cowboys, we didn't understand it very well sometimes. So, we'll wrap it up with this. Innovation, getting out of the box, is really nothing more than this. The real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new lands, but in seeing with new eyes. The ability to take a look, see what everybody else is seeing, and see something different. Where everybody else sees the problem, to see the opportunity. Where everybody else sees the throwaway resource, to see the value. Right? It's true in people, it's true in land, it's true in innovation. The name of the game is to determine whether or not the things that constrain you whether you can unanchor yourself. The great value of what BIF has done as an organization over the years is it has forced us to unanchor from what we thought to be true, what we thought our limits were. And this organization has worked really hard to keep us from getting caught by what we knew and to stay focused on what was possible. I encourage you to do that in your own lives and your own businesses. For those of you who are young enough to be still in university or in your formal educational system, what I would encourage you to do if you really want to buy into this innovation space is don't even ask your advisor. Figure out the coolest, weirdest course you can possibly take. Drop one of the mundane things that you can learn by just coming to BIF and swap out that requirement for something interesting that gets you out of your comfort zone. Do that and you'll continue to learn. The other thing is look around this room. Anybody who's got a little bit of gray hair and sitting in this room, those are the folks that you want to model yourselves after because they're still learning. It's great to be with you. Look forward to a few questions if you'd like to ask some. Thanks, Lee.